Welcome to the GOGcast, brought to you by XSplit Broadcaster. Simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah, and I am your host for this show. This is episode number 158. Another dope one for you this week. I got to go play a little Shadow of the Tomb Raider right here in Montreal. Got invited by the nice folks at Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal to New City Gas. We got to play the demo of the game. By the way, it's coming out pretty soon, September 14th. So yeah, I got to speak with David Anfonsi, who you're going to hear that interview as topic of the show. He is head of studio for Eidos Montreal. And we had a very interesting chat because I had a lot of thoughts after playing the demo, and it's good. It's real good, guys.
Excited.
They've had a plan since the beginning of the reboot of the Tomb Raider series. And it's all coming into fruition now.
I gotta play Rise, man.
Rise is so good.
Dude, I played the original Tomb Raider for the first time during the Christmas time.
Yeah.
So now I feel like I really gotta play Rise.
Well, you should do that. Make that part of your plan, and then you can jump into Shadow of the Tomb Raider. You'll be prepped for September 14th.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for a really good sale.
Lovely.
Hoping for the Steam summer sale.
Awesome. All right, as always, before I introduce you to all the friend folks around this table, if you enjoy the show, please subscribe. We are on Apple iTunes, of course, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. So, you probably wondering who I've got on the show this week. You heard Simon. Simon, how you doing?
Hello. I'm doing super well. Thank you for asking.
How about you, Catherine? You feeling better?
A bit.
Poor cat.
Last week I had the croaky voice because it was the hungover cast. This week I just have a very, very strong sore throat.
So sorry. That's okay. Well, like we always say, feeling ill, stay in, play games, right?
I was in and out of consciousness most of yesterday because of a fever, and all I did was watch back episodes of Critical Role. It made for weird dreams, to be honest. Like, I'm at the arc where the dragons attack the main city.
Don't tell me!
And then I was just, like, falling asleep and seeing dragons everywhere, and then waking up, and I was like,
oh god, dragons.
I was like, that was weird. I wonder what's going to happen with the dragons, and then put on another 3-hour episode, watch it, and then fall asleep promptly at the end again.
I started watching Silicon Valley with Michael last night. We made it through the full first season. Damn, that show is funny.
Yeah, it looks really funny. I haven't watched it.
I didn't know what to expect, but because, especially for those of us that work in that realm, that live in that realm, that understand some of it, like, the jokes they make, like, I'm like, I feel bad because Mike doesn't get it. Like, it's like got an extra layer of funny for us, right? Oh my god, it was good. So I think we need to talk about what we've been playing. Catherine, what have you been playing when you haven't been sick?
I'm still on Far Cry 5. I'm towards the end, so I'm trying to power through it. But then my game started crashing a lot, and I don't know why. Oh. It was pretty stable for a while, and now it just keeps crashing.
On PC?
Yeah.
That's sad.
I know. I don't know what's wrong. My game drivers are up to date and everything.
You work at UB, just go give the devs shit.
No, don't do that.
I don't know if they pushed an update or something.
Maybe.
I kind of put it on hold because I put down the graphics quality to see if that it was that, because I was hearing my computer like really fanning
whizzing.
Out.
Chug.
And whizzing and chugging, and it didn't really help, so I'm starting to wonder if either there's too much cat hair in my computer, or they pushed an update.
I would check about the cat hair.
Yeah, that sounds like an actual problem, because it is spring. And I am, like, my whole office has a thick layer of it everywhere.
Yeah, I bought a, it seemed like it was a thing all over Facebook. It was this, like, mitt thing for wiping down animals that are shedding.
Yeah, I bought one.
Freaking works.
Maybe on Bowie.
Does it work on Koopa?
No.
Oh my god, it
he
works on Bowie.
He wriggles
so
way
well.
Too much, and I can't get him to do the thing. So
yeah, no, Bowie loves it.
I just grab my cat by the scruff of the neck. Like I brush him, and he likes it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But when I get to like his tail and his thighs, because he has fluffy pantaloons and that's how he sheds so much.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it. And
fluffy
I just grab
pantaloon.
Him by the scruff of his neck and I'm like, we're doing this. And then I just spend a good 5 minutes just on his butt and on his tail. And then when we're done, I give him treats and I'm like, okay, thank you. I have to do that like several times a week in the springtime or we're dying.
Jesus. Yeah.
I know, yeah. He hates no, it. It's... Maybe that mitt would help, but I don't know if it would really, like, I really have to dig.
Mm.
Let's see, yeah, because maybe I'm not using it. I'll try it again. I have him, but, like, a good old D-shedder is what works for me usually. Just yeah. Brush it, Koopa likes it, so.
Yeah, no, I just like how it mats the fur together. Anyways, this is not the pet cast. This is the video game cast.
And Juju going on a tangent.
Going on a tangent, as we always do. Yeah. How about you, Simon? How's been the games? What you playing?
Yeah, I've been playing Dad of War.
Nice! How is Dad of War? And by Dad of War, we mean God of War.
Yes, of course. Sorry about that.
Dad
yeah,
of War.
It's been really, really, really good. It's really fun. The first of all, mm-hmm. praising the graphics for a console game. Mm-hmm. Holy fucking shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks really fucking great. Like, it's fucking awesome. And again, like most PS4 Pro games, they have the option to go between resolution and between FPS. So I choose FPS. Like, playing that game at a smooth 60, fucking sick. Really,
did
really
you go
cool.
back to see what it might look like with the graphics?
Yes, but like the frame rate drops to like 24 or 30, and it bothers me too much, so I sometimes, like, you know, when I'm in a pretty area, I'll bump it to 2K or just kind of like look at it. Well, it goes to 4K, but if you've got a 2K monitor, which is what I do, it like interlaces better, which is really fucking cool. So it looks great and it looks really fantastic, but the resolution just kills it for me. So I just play 1080p with a high FPS. And yeah, it looks really fantastic. The game is fun. The story is really engaging so far. Combat's difficult but rewarding, and it's not like cheap. Like, you've got a lot of indicators and stuff telling you if you're getting attacked by behind, and all, you know, you can do a quick 180 and all that kind of stuff. So I'm only like maybe 5 hours in, and it's so far it's really, really good, and I'm looking forward to playing some more. I don't understand quite right now why all the tens. Like, it's a really good game, but it's definitely not perfect, so I don't understand the tens right away.
And see how
well that's
goes.
Yeah, that's kind of why I want to see. Yeah. You know, maybe it gets fucking insane as I keep going, but it's definitely a really, really, really fantastic game. So if you have a chance to get your hands on it, definitely do, because it's worth your money. It's fucking great.
When you're done, I might borrow that disc.
Definitely. Well, I mean, it's yours technically, so I'll just give it back.
But yeah, no, because yeah, I'm still into Far Cry 5. So yeah, this weekend, I plan on keeping it kind of low key. This past week was kind of insane, so I want to get back into Far Cry 5. I did pick it up when I was in Montreal, because I was back and forth between here and Toronto, and then we had events and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, get back into Far Cry 5. I really want to get to the end of this. I want to know what happens. Allie's like, "Are you done yet? Are you done yet?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not done yet." So yeah, I had an emotional roller coaster ride earlier today when I finished Florence. Thank you very much, Catherine. It's worth its weight in gold. So yeah, go pick up Florence. It was kind of intense. I teared up a little bit.
It's the best $10 you've spent on mobile in a long time.
Was it even $10? I don't even think it was that. I think it was like five. It was cheap. It
might have gone down in.
Maybe I got it on a sale or something. But
I thought I paid like seven something.
Maybe
it
well
was ten-ish
though.
Ten-ish dollars. Anyway, did you play it one go?
No. I play it in phases. But yeah, no, it was worth it. I played some of it on the airplane, and I got to one point, like, just before I knew what's, you know, kind of had an idea of what was happening after reading your review. If you guys want to go read the review, go right ahead. It's on girlsongames.ca. And yeah, no, it hit me right in the feels. But at the same time, it was uplifting at the end, so I felt good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a big, realistic slice of life.
Mm-hmm. So I, on top of that, because I've obviously been traveling, though I had my Switch with me, I didn't really bring it out. I kind of stuck to mobile games. So between Florence, I was also continuing to play Hogwarts Mystery, Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery. And then it was like, you know, there's something about this. Like, what is it? So I needed to like go and compare to some other mobile games. So I picked up as well Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch. And when I was on the airplane... Neither, and I was bouncing back between those two games. So when I timed out on one game, I would go to the other game, back and forth, back and forth. Worked out pretty well. But then I got on the airplane, and both of those games require you to have an internet connection. So I was like, tabernacle. Aww. So I looked at my phone, and I still had SimCity Build It. So guess what I'm addicted to now? Again. So obviously, I've got a thing for simulation games. I need to be managing not just during my normal work life, but when I'm playing video games. What's up with that? Mm. But yeah, SimCity Build It has like sucked me back in. So yeah, there goes my life. And then of course on Thursday night, I was at New City Gas and got to play Shadow of the Tomb Raider demo, which yes. is so good. Oh my God. Talk about gorgeous game. Yeah. I couldn't get over it.
Yeah.
And jumping in felt straight up. Like I was just back in the saddle again for a Lara Croft game. And sometimes nice. When we're in those demos, I find that I almost get a little bit of like performance anxiety because you get a new game. You don't know the controls. I'm flipping between different consoles all the time. So A on a Xbox controller is not the same as A on your Switch. It doesn't even have letters on your PS4 controller, right? Mm-hmm. So that gets me every time. But I sat down and immediately... Like
you got back into it.
Back into it. Nice. So that was great. I won't get too much into Shadow of the Tomb Raider because obviously that's what our topic of the show is. So I talk about it a lot, but man, I'm excited. Super excited.
Damn it, gotta go play Rise.
All right.
Why aren't you on sale?
But before you go play Rise, we're gonna talk about news, okay?
Yes.
All right, let's do that right after this break. Time for news of the week. And because we seem to be on a Square Enix kind of road show here, Catherine, what have you got?
Well, apparently the Final Fantasy VII remake is being worked on as a new creation and not a simple remake because of job listings.
Really?
Shit. Yo, job listings, spoiling shit, leaking stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, so of course, I found that through a little blog called GamePer.com. I've never heard of them before, but they seem to have translated a job listing. According to the job listing, the Japanese dev is working on the title not as a simple remake, but a completely new creation. So, in the job listing, it said, create a new Final Fantasy VII, not limited to a simple remake, as a new Final Fantasy with action elements added to the traditional strategy, and deliver your creativity to the world. So that's verbatim from the job listing.
Mm-hmm.
Another part says, first business division is the Department of Square Enix working on Mobius Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy VII Remake. In addition to staff that work on the original Final Fantasy VII, the staff that worked on previous generation of the Final Fantasy series are joining the team one after the other. This is the chance to work with us on a new Final Fantasy creation, not limited to a remake. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I think they might be taking elements of their learnings from some of the Final Fantasies after 10, which weren't...
15.
Weren't all that great, and
what 10 was fucking great.
10 was great.
I mean, after 10.
After 10 is what I mean.
Gotcha. 12 was good. A lot of people love 12.
Yeah, 12? I think it's like they're taking the learnings of what worked and what didn't.
Yeah,
and then putting that 13, on 7.
13 was terrible, and then they fixed it, and then they fixed it, and then they repackaged it on Steam.
15, yeah.
And then 15 was 15. I haven't played 15.
Me neither.
I played the demo. Not my thing.
Yeah, so I think they're trying to see how they can remaster it. Not just remaster it, but rethink the actual gameplay so that it doesn't feel like a retro Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
probably in the line of what Ubisoft did to Assassin's Creed Origins and Far Cry to like keep the core gameplay but keep it fresh. And some of the changes we've seen in games like The Witcher 3 and how people are...
God of War.
Is it a remake then? Will they probably... I guess they'll keep the story, but the mechanics they'll change.
That's probably
what
it means.
So it's no longer a remake. It's almost like a reimagining.
Yeah, it's... They're saying new creation, but at the same time, I'm like... You gotta keep... It's gotta be Cloud, it's gotta be Sephiroth, and Sephiroth gotta impale Aerith at one point.
Spoilers! Oh my god! What the hell, dude?
It's only like an ancient game.
At this point...
If you don't know that by now, why are you listening to us?
Yes, why are you... Well, yeah, pretty much. It's like a rite of passage. Not that Sephiroth kills Aerith, but whatever.
Yeah.
But I actually got that spoiled for me at school.
Oh, no. That is so sad.
I know, because like... Guillaume lent me the PC CDs, CD-ROM games to play on PC. And at one point I was sitting in a classroom. We had an extra classroom in the library that was next to the computer room, and the computer we had shitty Macs. Mm-hmm. And somebody was playing that game there, and during my class I was bored and I turned and I looked and I saw the scene where Sephiroth impaled Aerith, and I was like, what the fuck is that dude doing? And then I start playing Final Fantasy VII.
And you're like, oh.
And Guillaume likes, like, how do you like it? I'm like, you know, the guy with the white hair, at one point he's going to kill the flower girl, right? And he was like, how? Why are you spoiled? Why are you spoiled? And I was just
how
like,
how do you know that?
He saw it on the sly.
Most random spoiler ever. That's how I was spoiled for Final Fantasy as a high schooler in, Secondaire 2 is eighth grade. Because I was bored during my religion class.
Wow.
And looked over, and the guy that was like in the glass pane next to me was playing, was at that exact scene at that exact moment.
So funny.
Yeah. I think they've learned so much about their series, the mechanics of RPGs. They've evolved so much that if they had done a straight up remake, I don't think people would have enjoyed it. I mean, look how well the Zelda games like Majora's Mask did. Like, I flipped from not liking that game at all to really enjoying it. So imagine now what this could do. This game could come out and be like a God of War. Do you know what I mean?
I remember the summons in this were really important, but you couldn't really skip them. That's something they added later. But you had the biggest summon was Knights of the Round Table. It took, I think, a good 5 minutes, the animation, 2 to 3 minutes.
I remember
just being like in a fight and being like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'm just gonna use Knights of the Round Table, go to the bathroom, refill my water, and then sit back down at the computer.
I feel like this game is a big blur in my head. Like, I don't know. I played it during a time where all the Final Fantasies kind of run together up until 10-2.
Yeah.
Yes, like, I think 9 is the only one that's really distinct because it's in a...
It's in the future, isn't it?
No.
9 is the only one that's, like, in a more like a fantasy setting, like a medieval steampunk.
Oh, right,
9
is the one with the kid with the tail.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Zidane.
7, 8, and 10 are more, like, in a futuristic...
Yeah,
8 dystopian...
is the one I'm thinking of as the dystopian one. Yeah.
8 was the one with Squall, the guy that has a gaseous
face.
And the gun,
keeping them all
the
straight is so hard.
I missed the boat on 7 too. Like, the first Final Fantasy I played was 8, because we had just gotten a PC and like, oh, it comes out. I think it was when the first 7 came out on PC. But I was like, oh, I'm gonna try it and try that. And like, I got really hooked into it. But like, I really skipped the boat on 7. So I played like 8, 9, 10. I'm like, oh, everyone keeps saying 7 is good, so I'm gonna try to play 7. Then I tried to play 7. I was like, what the fuck is this? So like, I never finished it because the blocky fucking graphics just killed it for me. And
yeah, but it was the first Final Fantasy on PS1.
The pacing is very different, and I just...
Yeah, I played 10 first and went backwards.
Couldn't get into it. 10 is fantastic. I love 10.
7, like, when I first started 7, I was like, you know, like, the graphics aren't great, but Gyan was like, oh, just stick to it. You know, the cinematics are beautiful and things like that. And I got into it. But I was happy to, like, when we got 8, we had a PS2 so I could buy PS1 games. So I bought 8 on the PS2, and I was happy to see that, like, Squall actually sort of kind of look like Squall.
Yeah, kind of, sort of humans.
But kind of
sort of humans.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII was like their first polygonal Final Fantasy. Yeah. And that's why people are begging for a remake, because so many people did, like, Simon opened it and was like, no. But it's got a great story.
Had to start somewhere.
It's got a great story.
Yeah, that's it. That's key. And if this is the way they're going to take the game, then I think this is the best way they could do it. Because they're probably looking at it being like, yeah, it's... What? How do we even handle this? Like, how long has it been now since they announced that? Kat, do you remember? When did they announce Final Fantasy VII Remake?
I want to say 5 years ago.
Yeah. It's been a while.
And you know, and they said, like, when they announced it, they said that they're only announcing it, that they're starting to think about working on it. So I don't even know why they announced it. Because they could have just, like, said nothing.
Just to say, like, it is on the... Stop asking for it. It's on the roadmap.
Yeah,
probably. But it's going to be like Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. You're just going to... We announced it. Now sit fucking tight for the next 5 years.
But Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, I feel like, had a different issue. They realized partway through
that the Wii
U was not going to work. And they were like, okay, we need a hook for the Switch to get people on there and a raison d'etre for this new console. And we're going to switch gears and focus on that. And you can see that that's where they made... That's how they were able to make Breath of the Wild so good. Because on the Wii U, I don't think we would have done as well. I know you guys both played it on the Wii U, but obviously the technical capabilities of that console worked against it.
Yeah.
But this is really interesting, because I think we're at a high enough graphics capability that seeing the stuff coming out of God of War and Tomb Raider and Far Cry and everything, just knowing how good that looks, we know we've already got a solid story. It's just how much are they going to change the mechanics and how truthful are they going to be to what it was in the past? Mm. That's going to be the interesting part.
Mm.
All right, let's get on the next news story. And Simon's got some stuff about PC gaming.
Yeah, well, you know, to play games on PC, you need multiple things, and one of the things you need is a freaking video card.
Yeah.
And if you've been following the news lately, the whole cryptocurrency thing that was booming and exploding for a couple months made it that it was almost impossible to buy video cards, because how do you mine those cryptocurrency with fucking video cards? So you had a lot of both consumers and a lot of companies who would also buy up store-wide video, like literally buy thousands of video cards from companies, making it almost impossible for the consumer to get their hands on an actual working proper video card. I'm lucky, like the one I have right now, I bought kind of right before the craze. The prices were starting to go up a little bit, but I'm not too bad. So that's been going on for, I want to say, a little less than a year now, and like video cards prices shot up easily 100 to 100%. Try to get your hands on really decent cards. Mid to high end cards are the ones who've been the most hit. And with the decline in cryptocurrency, with different ways of mining, with different ways of proposing things, and manufacturers kind of holding back on selling to miners, Bitcoin went down and all the other cryptocurrency went down. So it means that now suppliers have, like, hey, we have a shit ton of video cards just laying in our factories, let's drop the prices. So graphic card shipments are down by 40% over the last quarter. So that's actually very good news for the consumer, which means that the prices should be going down fairly soon. So that's very fantastic news. And also for those who are into the, you know, looking into Kijiji and eBay, a lot of high-end graphic cards have started to show up on those websites. Ooh. For very good prices. Although, be careful, I will say this, buying a card that would use for crypto mining can... It's
be burnt
almost
out.
Like a flip of a coin, because you don't exactly, like... These video cards have been running 24/7 at 110% for the last 3 months, 4 months, or whatever. So it might be fine, you might never have an issue, but it might also be kind of
heat damage.
Heated up a lot. You know, usually they don't. Usually they, you know, they have all these internal things that they shut down if they go too high or that kind of stuff. But I would never buy a used crypto mining graphics card, however the price. Because I feel like it's too much of a risk, and, you know, it's my primary gaming machine, so I don't want to just boot it up one day and my graphic card's burnt, no worky, just gotta buy a new one. But no, it's very good news for everyday people who don't mine cryptocurrency. You'll be able to afford a graphics card pretty freaking soon. So that's actually fantastic news. So I was excited to see that.
Yeah, I was wondering for folks. I'm like, I was lucky because, like, what, 2 years ago we built my computer?
Yeah.
Imagine how expensive it would have been. And I didn't even at that time have a top of the line graphics card, but I think it was still one of the ones that was used.
I don't remember which one I got you.
Yeah.
But,
I think it was 960.
960. Yeah. See, yeah. Like, right now, the 1060, 1070, 1080s are the one that are the most sought after for the cryptocurrency. So if you have a 1050, it's not as bad because they don't necessarily use it. But yeah, 960, 970 is what I used to have, and you know, that kind of stuff. All those mid high end graphics cards are the one that prices are going to start going down. So this is fantastic news for the PC gaming market.
Good. Oh, that is good news. I'm glad that that's kind of calming down, because
yeah.
Getting a little worried, because I mean, like, all the gaming PCs coming out, and imagine that too must affect consoles to a certain extent. It's the parts that I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Well, yes and no, because the video cards, like the people that mine crypto don't, like, you can't buy a console graphics card. Like consumer, you can't upgrade
the
graphics
card
of your console.
That's the key. There's only so many of the materials, they can only make them so fast. So if
I don't know,
the
maybe.
Companies that make cards and stuff are saying, oh, well, because of cryptocurrency, this is what the market's asking for, we're going to put the money towards making that. They're not using the stuff to make other types of cards or parts or whatever. So maybe. It could impact it, not just on PC gaming market, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's different technology. You know, the PS4 and Xbox, and they use Tegra GPUs, which is not what's in consumer base, so it's a different chipset and everything. Does it affect? I don't know to what extent. Maybe it does a little bit, but I honestly haven't seen anything that it in regards to that. But maybe I haven't looked into it.
I mean, all of our electronics and all our phones and all our graphic cards and all our consoles use very precious materials that are very limited on Earth. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, just RAM prices, like, that's happening right now with RAM, you know? There's so many, every device now has memory, so, you know, memory prices have definitely gone up. Like, it's crazy. You know, I bought her PC, and, like, for 16 gigs of RAM, I think I paid something like $189 a year, like, just 2 months, 6 months ago. Wow. And, like, she bought a new 16 gigs, and it was $250.
Wow.
So it's been going up a lot. So at least graphic cards are going to go down, so you know.
Because I was actually thinking of upgrading certain parts of my PC, because I've had it for, what, 3 years now? Since you built
it,
and I haven't touched it aside from buying hard drives.
Well, I mean, you're at 16 gig, and this video card should be pretty good still. Well, it depends
on
what you want.
Pretty still, but I feel like within the next year, it's going to start to, like...
Yeah, maybe.
Especially
once the new generations. Say what?
I'm not an ultra on all games anymore.
Hey, I have a 1070 and I'm not an ultra on all games. It's PC gaming is pretty fucking... if you want to go to ultra and get like some 120, 150 FPS, you got to put in the bucks, definitely.
I need a monitor first. Anyways, let's move on. Put up the Amazon wish list.
Definitely.
I've got a news story, because it's that time of the year, folks. We're starting to hear things about E3. So I think maybe in a week or two, we should probably sit down and do our E3 predictions.
I think we should.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. And maybe some of our listeners can get in on that. I might change a little bit how I do it this year. I think I got some ideas. But in the meantime, while we wait, we heard this week of Nintendo's E3 2018 schedule. And it kind of gives us an idea of like what we're going to hear from Nintendo, or hear about from Nintendo. So to give you a rundown, it looks like Splatoon 2 World Championships coming back. The opening round's going to be June 11th from 3:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. PT. The finals will be on June 12th. the Nintendo Switch video presentation. So getting, you know, that's our traditional E3 Direct. That's going to be on June 12th at 9 a.m. PT. So a little later in the day for us. What is that, 11, 12, something like that? Are we three hours difference? Yeah, ET, something like that. So we're going to get a look at Nintendo Switch titles for 2018, including the recently announced Super Smash Brothers game. So I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of that. I also have a feeling that maybe the E3 booth is going to be a lot on Smash this year. I think they learned that focusing on a title and making that like the theme of the booth is a really good idea after they did the Breath of the Wild one.
Mm-hmm.
Additional to that, like in Nintendo fashion, they actually do like live streaming throughout the entire show. They call that the Treehouse. So Nintendo Treehouse Live, 3 days of Nintendo Switch gameplay with Nintendo Treehouse members and developers, starts with the recently announced Super Smash Brothers game right after the video presentation. So it's gonna be like full tilt, and like these treehouses, they drop news, so it's almost like you have like a direct with like a super condensed, almost like a like full packed presentation, and then they slowly let out little additional tidbits during the treehouse. So watch when the schedule actually comes out about the treehouse. If there's a specific game that you're interested in, it's probably going to be shown during the treehouse at a later time, and you'll get more details. So yeah, E3 is always interesting like that. And then of course, since there's so much Smash, there's going to be a Super Smash Brothers Invitational 2018. It's going to start right after the conclusion of the Splatoon 2 World Championship Finals on June 12th. So yeah, it's Nintendo's really ramping together, and it's really interesting to see that they've got, you know, two big multiplayer games with championships that they're or competitions that they're going to be running during E3. I'm hoping that maybe we'll also get a little bit about a Pokemon game during that time, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you think we're going to get Pokemon, Metroid, maybe?
Yeah, I need some single-player stuff, because as much as I love Splatoon 2, and I'm sure I'll enjoy Smash Brothers, I need some stuff on my Switch that I can play with me on the airplane by myself. Right?
I mean, you can play Smash by yourself and Pokemon and Metroid.
Yeah, Pokemon, Metroid. That's it. That's what I say. I need some single player mode stuff. So, anything in particular you guys are really interesting to see from Nintendo?
I want to see Smash. Like, I'm super interested about what it's going to be. Like, I'm slowly getting into the fighting scene for esport, and I know Smash is a huge scene. So we'll see if the Switch version can take over Melee when it comes to actual tournaments, because it's, you know, every single tournament's still running Melee because that's the game that they want. So it's going to be interesting to see if Nintendo actually wants to support now these kinds of events, because I know that they're not really into Melee tournaments that are not like Nintendo official. They don't like that tournaments use Melee very often, so we'll see if they actually get into the esport both with Smash, which makes sense, because they're trying to do it with Splatoon. So yeah, I'm excited to see what kind of views they have on Smash with the esport scene.
How about you, Kat?
I'm actually interested more like in indies and things like that, to be honest. I'm not a big fan of Smash. It's good to have. Like, I had Smash on Wii U, and it was fun to have, like, when I had friends over, and the fact that we could play up to 8 was great.
Yeah.
Especially if you had it on 3DS, because your 3DS could become a controller. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky enough that Nintendo sent us both versions for trying out and reviewing, and at one point I ended up with all the copies for some reason, because we do share a lot of the games. Like, when we get physical games and Girls on Games, somebody reviews, and then we kind of like pass it around so everybody can try it. And at one point I had both. I don't know how it happened, but I would turn my 3DS into an extra controller for that. And then friends who had Wii U or the Wii that had the Wiimote Plus attachment, I was just like, bring them, and then we can play up to 8, and it was just like a lot of fun. But for me, it's not a focus other than that. So
yeah, the other interesting thing is the whole online service that Nintendo is going to have. I have a feeling they'll really start talking about it, because they said September 2018. So
yeah, E3 is the time to announce it and get people to sign up.
Yep, indeed. All right, it's time to get into topic of the show this week. And of course, like I mentioned before, I got to go play some Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So this interview coming up is with David Enfonsi, and he is head of studio at Eidos Montreal. And of course, lots and lots about Lara Croft. So we're going to get into that right after this break.
Thank you very much for bringing us here to check out Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Yeah,
thank you for coming.
This is awesome. That game, that demo is sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks beautiful. It feels like the previous three games,
okay,
but
perfect.
Super polished. Yeah. Like, I felt like when I picked up the controller, I was right back in the saddle again, like getting back in a bicycle.
Nice.
That important for you guys?
Yeah, very important. And you mentioned something very important to us, that it's respectful to the two previous games, which is key, because it's the third game of the trilogy. So we close this trilogy, and hearing that you feel that you're back, you know, on the playing Lara Croft, and it's true to the two previous games. For me, it's just okay. We did our job.
Okay.
So it's very, very important. And on the, you mentioned also that the demo is polished, but the game, the entire game is like that at the moment. And I can give you something I never say to anybody yet, is that the game is fully playable from beginning to the end since May last year.
Wow. So during this time, what kind of stuff do you do? Is it more like testing, polish?
It's more about to make sure that we understand the pace of the story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything is centered on Lara. So it's very important that we balance the different mechanics, but the story also, to deliver a great experience, a great Lara experience. So having the game rough, but fully playable from beginning to the end, early on, that allow us to tweak every aspect of it before we level up the quality of the game. So, because after that, you know, you can spend a lot of money on the quality side, but you know that it's worth it because the story is there, balancing is there, and you're confident in your product. Mm-hmm. So it's very specific to the studio to do that.
Okay.
It has not been done for the two previous games. It has been done for this one. And what you experience tonight is the result of that. So
wow.
I'm glad that it works.
Oh, it definitely works. Dan was on stage and he mentioned that, you know, this trilogy, this thought process, like this was in the plan from the beginning, the 2013 edition of the game to Rise to Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
How has Lara changed?
So there is two questions here in the sense that it's planned since the beginning because if you remember the it was in 95 96 the first on PlayStation 1.
Oh my goodness,
I played it on PlayStation 1.
Me too.
1996. That's where when I discovered Lara, you know, and at this time she was perfect. She was some kind of the James Bond.
Yeah.
For women, you know. So it's different experience. So if you want, and it was the initial idea for this new trilogy to center the experience on Lara and not on the puzzles, the environment, and she's perfect and da da da. If you want to center your experience on the character, the main character, you have to think about the evolution. And when you think about that, you say, sorry, fuck, you cannot do that within one game.
True.
You have to develop the character, and maybe we need a trilogy to do that. So from that idea, you know, from that time, you know, it was clear for us that we had to think about a Lara, a different Lara for each game, and make sure that we understand how she became became the perfect, the Tomb Raider, the perfect Lara Croft, you know, with a lot of insurance and, you know, she can deal with every obstacle and she masters the environment and everything. But through the Tomb Raider in 2013, you know, she's fragile, you know, she's the teenager, you know, facing obstacles, true obstacles for the first time. The second one, Rise of Tomb Raider, she's willing to discover things, you know, and go into the dark and, you know, that kind of stuff. For the third one, she's becoming the Tomb Raider. So that's the way to plan the evolution of the character. And the trilogy was the best support to do that.
I feel it. We've now in the more of the Mayan time, back into the Mayan ruins. So a little background information. I actually got married in Mexico a few years back.
Okay.
And I went swimming in a cenote. So I know they're creepy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it sounds like the tombs in this game, you're going to be swimming a lot. You're going to be exploring cenotes. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a lot creepier than before.
Yeah.
How does that change the atmosphere of the game and how you were developing everything around Lara and her character?
It's a pretty good question, actually, because how you say that in English? Sorry, the la ligne directrice.
The directorial line, the creative direction,
yeah,
the
creative
artistic
direction. The creative direction. Yeah, you're right. For this one was fear.
Ooh.
And fear for every aspect of the game, on the narrative side, for tombs, from traversals, for the cenote. So we wanted the gamer to experience fear at every level.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the best setting, to experience fear? It's underwater.
Oh, yeah.
Under pressure. Mm-hmm. When you have to find your way to a very tricky rocks, you know, and path and everything, and it's all about that. It has been a challenge on the production side, you know, because animation on the water and everything, it's not usual things to do, and you will experience that a lot in that game. So
you do, and even in the demo that we played, there's a few moments of you get that anxiety, you get, and the way you've illustrated it through it being more difficult to see, the music getting more intense, you
definitely
do get that anxiety. You start to feel claustrophobic, just like Lara is encountering.
Definitely, yeah. And you have some pressure around that. But again, you know, it's all centered on how Lara face the obstacles, how she deals with that. And you have to be part of that too as a gamer. So it's very, very interesting. And you experience the last scene of the demo.
Oh yeah,
where she came too far. You know, she's doing mistakes.
Yeah, consequence is a big part of this
game. Exactly, definitely, and that's the way we all evolve. We learn things. So I think for me it's a turning point in the sense that we experience that through Deus Ex games also.
True.
When we develop these characters through different settings or situations, this one is a bit special because this iconic character, you know, we bring her further than what we did before, and showing that you can do mistakes and learn from that. This relationship with Jonah is key to the experience.
Do
also
I remember Jonah from the second game in the very beginning where she goes off in the ice
exactly.
I knew I recognized him.
Yeah, and Jonah for this game is like not the opposite, but is like a mirror in the sense he's grounded, you know, he's living his moment, you know, he's not thinking about himself. Only, you know, with the last cutscenes of the demo, you understand that he's more grounded than Lara. So he's playing a key role in the evolution of Lara through this game.
Yeah, she's borderline obsessed with her endgame, her goal, to stop Trinity, to the point where she borderline doesn't care the havoc she's wreaked. Reaping across the world, like this town that you walked through in the demo, you experienced, and there it looks like they're living the Day of the Dead. There you have the Mexican skulls everywhere, all these people, and then once everything starts to crumble and you're swimming through and you see all these bodies, and it's just like, obviously you're just trying to survive and get through, but I don't feel like she's looking back at it and seeing what she caused.
No,
Jonah's like the yin to her yang.
Exactly, it's exactly that. And you know the title of the game, you know, Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
True.
It's all about that. You have a dark side, you have a light side. After that, how you deal with that as a person. And it's very interesting to experience that through Lara Croft, yeah.
I'm hoping she has a reckoning and comes to a point where she realizes maybe the errors of her ways, so she's not, you know. Because borderline, she's trying to stop the end of the world. But sometimes, especially in that demo, it felt like she was bringing on the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And through the demo, you can feel it a bit. It's this in the sense that she does not know that she is about to save the humanity.
Mm.
It's all about her revenge. Mm-hmm. But it's bigger than that. So at some point, we hope that she will understand that it's not just about her.
Mm. How much research has gone into this for like the whole background and history with the Mayan culture?
A lot.
And, yeah?
A lot, yeah, because we don't have any knowledge about that, to be humble, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we work with professors, specialists in Maya and Inca society, civilization.
True, because he mentions Peru in the game as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly, to understand their language and they are day-to-day because you will experience that through the game. So it was very important to be precise on that and very respectful because, as you know, for that kind of game, action-adventure, immersion is key.
Yep.
If you break that, you lose the gamers and he's out and it's very difficult to come back.
True.
So we worked a lot on that, as we did for Deus Ex, for the transhumanism and everything. We were invited to conferences to speak about that.
It's so cool.
And we could do that now for Maya and Inca civilization.
Oh, that's so amazing. Ah,
so
super
and cannot reveal too much, but you will experience the true language of this for this civilization.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. The world also, of course, if you're going underwater, going the cenotes, but then the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan mentioned you become part of the jungle.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. You're almost like Tarzan.
Like Rambo?
Yeah, a badass woman version.
The second one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So, Lara, even in the illustration of how you've pictured her and seeing when you had the three different versions of Lara up from game 1, 2, and 3, she looks like she knows what she's doing
yeah,
now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
She's in control, total control.
Mm-hmm.
That's the final evolution of Lara. But it's very interesting because there is some subtleties around that.
Okay.
It's whatever, if you're in control, does not mean that you do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
Again. So we learned that from Deus Ex, when you can decide the way you pass through the combat.
Mm-hmm.
Stealthy approach, or your gunfight, or, you know, with the knife or whatsoever.
Yep.
The arrow. So again, you can decide, you know. And she's in control, but she's very brutal, like the jungle, like the setting. But it's part of understand your limits as a person.
True.
I remember it's personal experience, but it's not within the jungle. But I was young, you know, first job, working very hard, you know, and did not I was not detecting my limits, you know, different states of your limits.
True.
And yeah. and going too far on that, and afterward you say, yeah, I should have known that the different states, you know, until before I reached the limit. So you do mistakes like that, but after that you learn and you better understand you know, you have better understanding of you, and you will see that happening through the game.
How's it been working between Eidos here in Montreal and Crystal Dynamics? The teamwork, it seems like it's coming off amazingly. Has it been well? I mean, Crystal Dynamics is in the U.S. You guys here, Eidos here. How's that been going?
So we worked on the together on the three
games. On the three.
So we were not leading the two previous games.
Mm-hmm.
This one we are leading Shadow.
Amazing.
Yeah, very happy with that. It's never easy. To be honest, two different ways to develop games, two different culture, two different ambitions.
Two different languages.
Two different languages,
yep.
Exactly. A lot of barriers, you know, to work correctly. So
yep.
It's very demanding. Mm-hmm. Nothing is easy around a collaboration like that. Mm-hmm. That being said, I've been part of the two previous games. We learned a lot mm-hmm. about Lara Croft, the Tomb Raider experience, the pillars of this franchise and everything. So I would say that the final result is that not having done these two previous games, it would have been difficult to do this one.
Okay.
So that's the big lesson for me. And for this one, Crystal worked with us for the first year. Mm-hmm. But after that, the game has been done entirely in Montreal.
Wow.
So I would say 95% of the game has been done in Montreal. So I'm very proud of that. Maybe you hope studios
not at all. No, I actually think it's impressive that I know distance is difficult, and yeah. you guys have made magic happen
yep.
to be able to bring them together over distance too. I mean, just what I played, yeah. it's fantastic.
And we are continuing this collaboration. We announced the Avengers
wow.
with a partnership with Marvel, and we have both studios working on that. So I'm very happy with that. So we continue the collaboration on different developments. They have their strengths. We have our strengths, and we put that together. And that's
yeah,
it.
Greater than the sum of their parts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So game comes out September 18th?
14th. Yeah, exactly.
Even sooner. That's better. 4 days sooner than I thought. Nice. I'm okay with that. So I guess you guys will be waiting patiently to see how everything pans out. Do you have any more work to do in the meantime? You just, sit back? More to show at E3, maybe?
Yeah, honestly, the game is in good state at the moment, good shape, no problem with that, but we want to deliver the best quality possible, so we are still working a lot
good.
On that development until mid of September, and of course, yeah, we'll be present at E3
awesome.
With new stuff.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah,
I'll be
definitely.
Waiting.
And,
I'll be watching.
At the studio, we have two other major developments
it's
also,
true.
So we are busy.
All right, thanks. Well, I won't take any more of your time. Thank you so
no
much.
Problem. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having us, and I can't wait to play more.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. It's time to close out the show like we do every week. Want to thank our wonderful website hosting partner, Fun.io, for any type of website hosting that you may be looking for. You should go check them out. Stream schedule, stream team. Simon, what's going on?
Good news for Nixie came out this week. She's now officially partnered with Astro.
Woo! Go, go!
Yeah, for headsets and all that sort of gaming. So congrats on Nixie. And apart from that, it's... regular streaming schedule. Check it out, GuzzleGames.tv.
Mm-hmm. Did I see that Nintendo Canada had released Not Nintendo Canada.
Oh, Xbox!
Going,
yeah!
Xbox Canada
That's
had
true.
Released a video with a bunch of our streamers
yeah,
about getting to Mixer and... starting
yeah,
there from the beginning?
Yeah, Abby Blonde and Gaming.Geek were in that little video who gives kind of tips and tricks on how to start streaming on Mixer and how to stay motivated and what to focus on when you first start. So yeah, it's very cool. Check it out on, pretty sure it's on Xbox's Twitter, that kind of stuff, so...
We should go add that to the site, Kat. I forgot about that the other day.
I did retweet and reshare on Facebook.
Ah, we'll add that to the website too. What else is on the website?
Right now, taking a little break, getting ready for E3, but we do have a backlog of all the GOG cast episodes. Of Buffs and Nerfs is back. So we
Yay!
Have episode 13 about player bans there, and apparently y'all don't agree on it.
Nope. First episode where we had diverging opinions.
Yeah. But coming up in the next weeks, like, you can expect more stuff on God of War and Shadow of Tomb Raider and all that jazz. And you heard Leah talk about Florence, and I did a article on that about a few weeks back, so it's probably not very far there. So check it out in the mobile game section.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank everybody for being on the panel this week. Catherine, how can people track you down on social media if they want to talk more games with you?
I am CSDSBINS, CS de Bien on Instagram and Twitter. You can talk games and Dungeons and Dragons, Critical Role, and art stuff with me.
Nice. How about you, Simon? Where can people find you?
I am GOG Simon on Twitter, and we talked a little bit about Buffs and Nerfs. So if you want to check it out, at Buffs and Nerfs on Twitter and on Podbean as well.
Awesome. And I am Leah Jewer on most social media platforms, GOG Leah on Mixer and Xbox Live. But of course, you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can follow us on all our social media channels, The Girls on Games on Twitter and Facebook, just Girls on Games on Instagram. You can continue this lovely conversation and more on discord.me/girlsongames. But of course, if you need to know anything at all, you can track us down on our home base. That's our website, girlsongames.ca. So once again, thank you, Kat. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, David, for letting me come play Tomb Raider. That was awesome. Yeah. So we're going to see you guys later. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go play Far Cry. Bye.